Blog Talk Radio. This is my question I had to learn. This is my answer I had to yearn. Freedom comes when you learn to let go. Freedom comes when you never say no. There's nothing left to lose. There's no place left to hide. There's no greater love than the power of goodbye. I thought I'd start it out with a song tonight instead of some cranky news about the weather. It's 38 degrees here in Minnesota. It's been drizzling all day. Our cars look real shiny, and over half the snow melted, which is a good thing. No more slipping on the ice. John just joined the house. We'll let him in. Good evening, John.
Greetings, Janessa Hoffman. And how is thy holy hammer today?
A little exhausted, but still functioning.
Yes. It sounds like...
So how is thy guitar sledgehammer?
You know, it's actually doing good. I had a couple rehearsals for some music specials to perform, which is kind of nice because I'm at an age where it's more difficult to be viable. You know, when you're younger, people are always asking you to play. Can you do this? Can you do that? And sometimes you hit a window where it's like no one asks you to play, and you get out of visibility. And, you know, I mean, I still perform at church every week, but, you know, to do a special with a group or with a singer or things like that. And so it's kind of nice to have a couple little gigs I'm doing right now. And that's kind of cool.
So how many guitarists are there in your church?
We've got about four or five people that can play pretty good. And we all kind of alternate. We're all able usually to play piano, guitar, drums. It's kind of cool. Some of it was just the influence I had starting out with the younger kids, because I would show them, I would have them try different instruments. I would tell them, hey, why don't you try the drums here, and just jam a little with it and try keyboards and just to goof around, just to get the exposure. And then some of them, they started to gravitate to other instruments. So it's kind of cool. We could actually switch all the instruments in the middle of the song, and everyone could go to each different one and play, you know, at a good level. It's kind of cool.
That's good.
It
well,
really
Bob,
helps you appreciate.
Bob just circled. Bob gave me a suggestion that I texted him before the show. He was doing something, so here he is. Good
Hello.
Evening, Bob. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you quite well. How are you doing tonight?
Fairly well. Yeah, I'm working on that Bible study that I need to create.
Nice.
It's a long process. It'll take about a month to do.
Well, that'll be good, because in about a month or so, besides St. Nicholas, St. Hoffman will be visiting Southern California, and
I know.
Don't alert the media or Homeland Security.
Yes, well, we promise to be nice and not naughty till you come.
Not only are we celebrating Jesus' birth, but we need a photo op of all three of us in one picture for our radio show.
Nice.
Okay.
That would be cool. And
yeah.
I take it that we're not using mug shots for any of these pictures?
No. We're going to wear something funky, but I haven't figured out what.
Oh, that would be kind of cool.
Maybe we'll be wearing robes like monks, or like Tibetan monks.
Well, you know, for Christmas, we could dress up as the three wise guys from the East.
Ooh.
So tell me, Jane, what
next topic,
is there, go ahead.
The headline news tonight is I only threw out one topic for our discussion. It's Tamar Rice, a 12-year-old black child from Cleveland, was shot in cold blood last night, I believe, or this morning, by the Cleveland cops. He had a toy pistol. It was a BB gun with a yellow safety cap, and he had it in his pants, and the cops told him to put his arms up, and he didn't, and they shot him through the stomach and killed him.
And how old was this child?
12.
12.
So do you think there's going to be another Ferguson, Missouri?
Myself, my opinion, I think so. I'm sure people are looking for it. And I have to say, I'm kind of pro-cop on a lot of things, and I'll tell you why. It's like when you're on the street, every day I bicycle to my little dog-sitting gig, and I'm going down Lincoln Boulevard, which is very busy. It's on the west side. It's by Venice. It's by where Muscle Beach, and it's very highly congested. And every second you're going down the road, you know, a car stops for a second, and you have to immediately think, why are they stopping? Like, is someone walking in front of me? You know, and then the next moment you see a car or a truck pull out, and you have to, in a split second, make these decisions that, you know, if you miscalculate, you're dead. You get run over. And I can only, you know, you may say, well, it's a 12-year-old kid. Well, it depends what the lighting is, what the situation is.
Yeah, he was in front of a boys and girls club type place. It was a community rec center. And someone called in 911, but the 911 person didn't tell the cops that the person who called in thought that he was wielding a toy gun. They failed
right.
to tell the cops all the information about. But still, John, the cops are supposed to have good eyesight. It doesn't matter if it was 5 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I would be very reluctant to shoot a child.
I agree, but what I'm saying is you're showing up and you tell someone you're a cop. I mean, I know as a little kid, when I saw a policeman, it was like, whoa, it's like I was taught to just, it's like, you know, minority kids in areas where, you know, I don't think it was probably a rich area. I could be wrong, but it's like you grow up on the streets knowing with the police or the heat, it's like you do what they say or you're going to get shot. Now, again, it's not a license to do it. I'm just saying they have to make a split decision, and they've got a 911 call. The police are on high alert anyway. They're stressed out. So I don't know. You just don't see this happen if you just – put your hands
well,
up.
I'm going to let Bob talk,
I'm going to disagree, John.
He
when
can
you
do that.
Grow
That's cool.
Kids growing up in black communities aren't schooled and trained to know that when the police tells you to do something, you stop, lift your hands, and do it. That's not what they're taught at all. They're taught just the opposite. All the brothers teach them, when you see the cops, run. Now, don't let them get their hands on you. Now, go get out of there, run. That's what they're taught.
Uh-huh.
I think that toy guns should be, for this very reason, toy guns should be illegal. I don't care what kind of toy gun it is, anything like that, because young people with these toy guns have caused so many kids getting killed because
right.
it looked like they had a gun or they could have had a gun or just, you know, I think that these kinds of, they should stop manufacturing them immediately, and there should be a law that all these guns should be turned in for destruction within the next month. That's my personal opinion.
That's an approach.
You know what? I saw a picture of the gun and it looked pretty real. It was a good sized BB gun, but I guess he had just, within the last few hours of his life, he had taken that safety cap off. Now, I just wanted to clarify one point that John made. My son is 16. He doesn't generally play outdoors at all, except for him and Zach used to walk the trails in Duluth. But he's never had a gun, a plastic gun, a BB gun, a fire cap gun. But even if he did, I don't think he'd have the nerve to bring it on the street or wield it. Now, even so, even by saying that, I have a different kind of child who's not too social. But the fact of the matter is a lot of black kids in the ghetto are unregulated too. Their parents aren't watching them, and I'm not saying that to be racist. I worked in public housing in Virginia. A lot of kids hung out on the streets. And this kid might have been goofing around, but I still don't think he deserved to be shot. I'm sorry.
He doesn't deserve to be shot. I mean, no one deserves really to be shot unless they're, like, trying to, you know, hurt someone. But the point of kind of what I'm making is that kids, even say if their parents don't teach them, you know how many violent shows they watch? And in every show, I mean, I was watching a show, you know, Rookie Blue or whatever. You know, there's a million cop shows. In every show, criminal, right, is running with a gun. Cop says, freeze, you know, stick them up, you know, put your hands in the air where I can see them. This isn't something like, oh, I'm 12, I've never heard this before. You've heard it 15,000 times, and you've seen the shows and movies where it's like the cop had to decide whether to shoot the guy or not. So, I kind of go, no, someone that's 12 is not that ignorant. Someone, you know, maybe 4 or 5 or 7, and they're playing with, daddy's gun. I get that. But, you know, you're 9, 10 years old, you know, on the street, people shoot you if you don't put your hands up in the air and he thinks you've got a gun. And, you know, someone that naive, and I just think it's like, it's almost like Darwin. It's like you've just decreased the population of someone that's going to get killed later on in life. Now, that's not to excuse the police. It doesn't mean they should wield their guns on everyone. I'm just saying, until I know that situation, walking down that street, coming up to approaching, maybe there's 3 or 4 kids, and maybe one of them, you know, it turns around, and you're going, put your hands in the air where I can see them, right? And there's this video. It's very powerful. It shows a kid. Cop runs up to him and goes, put your hands in where I can see him, and he's got a weapon, I think a weapon on the ground, and he's reaching, he's putting it down. And a cop behind him goes, gun, and he shoots him in the back, and you go, oh, my goodness, the cop just shot this poor kid. What you don't see in the video is as he's putting down his gun with the right hand, with his other hand to the side with his baggy pants, he's reaching and grabbing a gun in his back pocket. And the cop from behind saw it, yelled gun, and shot him. But when you watch the video, you go, your first impression is outrage that a cop would shoot a kid in the back. And I'm just saying, until we, you know, you're a cop for a day and you stop 15 guys, homies, in an hour.
I know, John, we understand that. We understand the routine and stress of a cop, but being the fact that Ferguson, Missouri, has been in the headlines for 6 months, don't you think all these police who are trained and for all these types of activities should at least take some heed and caution to a kid?
Well, you know, see, the thing is, you're saying one isolated incident. Yeah, if there was one incident, I'm saying on the street, you're driving around and, you're talking about, 50 times you're seeing, you're driving down the street, you see how many homeless people, right? How many vagrants, how many people with baggy clothes, backpacks, and they're suspicious, they have a meeting at the corner. You're driving by this every hour. You do this every day, and you do this for a year. You know, you're talking about thousands of situations. So now, you know, 1 out of 1,000, you're, you know, trigger happy, or a kid, you act in a way that looks suspicious. I'm just saying, I just think it's almost like a mathematical.
Okay,
it's like a car accident. It's just going to happen.
Let Bob go.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a couple of points here. One is that, Jane, how big was he when he was 12? Did he look like a 12-year-old?
He was he was already 5'11 at 12.
Right.
He could beat me up.
He looked like an adult, even though he was only 12. Next, with Ferguson, the news media is creating so much of this stuff that they always describe that the person that was shot as an unarmed black teenager. How about describing him as a black teenager who was attacking a policeman? A black teenager who was attacking a policeman.
Well, the fact of the matter, Bob, is that Dorian Johnson, Michael Brown's companion, said that he didn't do anything and the cop chased him. And the cop said that Michael Brown stuck his hand in the car, was grabbing for his gun, and the cop felt threatened. So there's two opposing views. It's just up to who you want to believe.
Right. And it, cops are trained to handle these situations like split second. You know, they do the gun drills where the sign pops out, and they have to, you know, a point whatever of a second, they have to decide if it's bad guy, you know, granny, a child, a kid with a toy gun. So they do a lot of training in that. And I also, you know, I'm not like defending, like, go shoot, you know, everyone on the street. I actually am also, you know, I'm just trying to be balanced. It's like, let them do the reports. Let them do all the crime scene, the CSI. Let them look at all the parameters. If they shot out of, you know, misjudgment, they need to definitely be accountable for it. But I'm just saying, you get a 911.
It did appear that the kid was goofing around, pretending like to be like a cop, like bang bang. You know,
right.
He took the gun, was holstered in his belt area. So I think it was between his pants and his underwear, and he pulled it out. So he was probably immaturely as a middle schooler doing the bad cop, good cop thing. But the person who called 911 was probably inside the center, the community center, and she probably should have just come out and told the kid, put the gun away or go home. She probably made it worse by calling 911, and then it was just a mishap that they didn't communicate properly. But in this case, the only thing that really caught me off guard about the story was his age,
a
12-year-old.
I'll give you a little dirt on me. About 2 weeks ago, I didn't mention it just because I didn't want to be too sensational, but you know, I work with different musicians, male and female. You know, some are old, some are young. So I have a 22-year-old college student. She's shot my videos and things like that, and we perform concerts together. So, and she's in the college environment where you come home at 12 at night or 1 in the morning because you're taking buses from the Valley. And it's just standard protocol. We were working on a performance, and plus she's got a project to turn in for school. So we were driving back around 1:30, going down Crenshaw. Now, my car, because the radiator overheats, so, you know, after 5 to 10 miles, I got to pull over, and yeah, I carry 3 or 4 containers of water, actually about 6 or 7. So I'm covered. I can drive, you know, for an hour or so, but I have to keep pulling over and adding water. So we get off of the 10 freeway. We're in the hood, and we're going down Western.
Were you by Crenshaw?
Yeah, and heading out towards, so it's kind of by the Coliseum where USC plays, where the Los Angeles Raiders used to play, so forth. So we're heading out that way, and we're going towards Vernon. It's about 2 or 3 miles down there. And on Western, there's also another street that runs parallel, like Normandy and a few others.
Vermont,
you know, Alvarado, that kind of stuff. Well, Hoover. And as we're going down Western, more so than the other streets, I usually go down Normandy, but because the car was overheating and I was turning off on the freeway, I'll just take Western, pulled over, add some water. Going down Western late at night at that time, it's Hooker Row, right? So I pull over, side street, add water. Cop comes by, flashes a light towards the car, kind of says, any problems? Like, oh, no, no, just adding water. He says, cool. I, you know, put the hood down, start going down the street, and for whatever reason, the thermostat in my car sticks. Usually it doesn't. So in about 2 minutes, it starts overheating again because the water isn't circulating. So I just pull over to the side of the street and, you know, about 3 blocks down and start adding water again. Well, here comes Mr. Stick-Up-His-Butt officer, same guy, and goes, what's going on here? I go, oh, it's overheating again. You know, I'm adding more water. The hood is up, right? I've got a container of water. It's very obvious what I'm doing. He says, could you step aside from your vehicle? I'm like, oh, boy. So he thinks, in his mind, I've picked up a 22-year-old girl hooker. It's a prostitute, 55-year-old guy. So now I'm thinking, I know how his mind's thinking. And he starts asking me, like, where'd you come from? Where are you going? What are you doing? Who is this person? Blah, blah, blah. And I go through the whole protocol. I live in Santa Monica. I teach music at a church. She's a college music student, a major, music major. And, you know, musicians, it's 1 a.m. It's not like, you know, 5. It's like, it's, you know, we're coming home. Point is, he starts asking all this stuff, and he says, I want you know, he cuffs me. He says, okay, once you get in the car, I'm just got to continue my investigation. He said, and you know, he called
idiot.
In my record and everything.
What
of course,
a fucking idiot.
So then he goes to her, and she's raised on this, you know, she lives in the hood, so she already knows the drill, you know, of what they're going to ask. But everything checked out. So, yeah, I'm a college student. Yes, he lives in Santa Monica. Yes, I live off of Vernon. Yes, we're, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so he comes back to me. You know, normally cops, I've, you know, been pulled over a million times because I drive a red Camaro and, you know, I'm a minority person. So I know that, you know, how to handle them. Normally they come back and they're sympathetic, like, oh, Mr. Yoder, we're so sorry. Just, you know, trying to, you know, be, you know, just make sure you're safe and blah, blah, blah. This cop stayed in bad cop mode. He's like, your stories seem to check out. So I, you know, I'll let you go. But if something's going on here, next time I'm going to get you. You know, I'm going to find out what's really going on. You know, it's like, there's nothing going on. She's got her student, you know, she has her musical papers that she's working on with her, right? And I know it seems odd, but we're musicians, you know. And the point is, you could only imagine if our stories didn't line up, you know, he would try to say, oh, you got money on you, and, you know, she's a prostitute, and blah, blah, blah.
Did you have money on you?
Yeah, I'm not going to drive around with no money in my pockets going through, you know, if my car breaks down.
You know what, John, can I ask you a question? And it's off topic. Did you know you can rent or lease a car for, like, less than $500 a month? I mean, you just might want to save yourself the headache.
Did you know that for three months of doing that, I would have $1,500, and that would be the price of putting in an engine and, you know, clutch and all that stuff in my car. Yeah, I'm fully aware that I choose to because I need to. You know, I'm juggling a lot of things. As Bob and other people will know, I help a lot of people. And the only way I can do that is by living a very tight life. So I can't, you know, if I do that, then I don't help people. Like, example, with this particular person, just to let you know, her mom went through a divorce. The dad left them. He was trying to cut them out of no support. He had an attorney. I jumped in, and I paid for an attorney. It was $3,000. Who's going to do it? The church? No. Johnny Rock does it. How does he do that? How can he juggle all these things? Because he rides a bicycle, and he drives a car that he adds water to.
Because the Lord blesses him because John gives.
Well, you know, the thing is, the Lord's not going to do it, right? The church isn't going to help him. I had to jump, like, we are the church. We are Christ. So
how could
it's
that
a tough
man
call.
Cut? The state would have gone after that man for the child support.
Well, see, what he did is, and, you know, this is just stuff that happens. He sends paperwork to her. She doesn't speak a lot of English, so it's she doesn't know the law system. So she's thinking about it. Do I sign this? Do I agree to this? He's making demands. You know, you must accept this much support. I have an attorney. Don't fight it. Blah blah blah. You're going to lose in court. She's thinking about it. While she's thinking about it, he's filing papers straight to the judge, going she hasn't complied within 30 days. And the judge is going, oh, she's not responding to this. I'll grant your request as you state it because it's not contested. So while we're, you know, dinging around with it, and I finally said, let's get an attorney because we don't really know what your legal rights are. While we're doing that, the attorney goes, he's already filed his request and that there's an official name for it, like refusal to respond or something like that, or lack of response. And he said, we have to refile. So the judge doesn't grant him everything he's requesting. But, you know, that's just life. It's like the church is telling, oh, God's going to take care of it. You guys will get back together. No, he has a girlfriend on the side. She's pregnant, and he's never coming back. This is a cruel, cruel world we live in.
You know, I know we shouldn't talk personal matters online, but I just have one last comment.
Oh, go for
it. If I make $3,000 a month, and my friends need help, I'm only going to give $100 out of that $3,000 because my bills are $2,800 a month. But I'm more power to you if you can give more than you got. But on the other hand, you're suffering too.
It's true, but you know the point is, there's a certain point where you know you have friends around you care about, their house is on fire, and you go, there's risk. Do I stay safe or do I jump in? And, you know, we're commanded to follow Christ. Now, we also can take care of ourselves and say, hey, let the house burn. So in my case, again, it's not like, oh, I have to walk in the snow for 5 hours. It's like it's a little inconvenient, right? But people take the bus all the time. They walk. I'm actually learning a new way of living. And so probably first of the year I'll get my car fixed. I'll sell some stocks and juggle and dance. And but in the meantime, you know, I kind of look at it this way. Hey, if anyone wants to pay my bills, I'm all ears, you know. I have no problem with that. You know, it's like God helps us, but we have to help ourselves.
Well, the Bible says that it'll multiply if you help somebody.
I'm all ready for it.
Bob,
I got my checkbook out
here. Do you have any comments in the last 5 minutes?
Yeah, well, I think that John works for a fella that I don't see why you don't like just write down a little paragraph about your automotive needs and pass it to the fellow that you work for, you know.
Yeah, because you have a job, John, where you have to deliver office supplies. Ask Brian Rosenblum for a SOS truck.
No, first of all, we shouldn't
mention people that have worked for companies that have had lawsuits against me. But second of all, you know, the thing about it is in life, I'm at a point where I'm dealing with military strategies. I'm dealing with situations and other people that are not logical. They're not going to take a logical path. I've tried negotiation. Example, one of the gigs I have, the gal who was working before me tried logic, and she got fired. I need the gig, you know.
For the same company?
Well, these things are involved, but the point is, like, I'll take example, a company, I'm not going to say what company, that I worked for, decided to sell itself to another company and plan this for 6 months to a year or so, according to what we were told, and then we found out suddenly on a Friday, and then the next Monday, it's like you need to report to another location to work if you want to have a job. So you go, what's normal about that? Don't you normally tell people, by the way, we're planning in 6 months or 3 months or a couple months to do this or that. You may not want to have a kid, buy a car, get married, you know, plan to, you know, buy a mortgage on a house because your status may change significantly, right? So you go, what's, you know, legally they aren't obligated to tell us things like that. That's the world we live in. It's just like, you know, it's survival. So I don't try logic in these situations or fairness. I go with survival.
There was an atheist in my newspaper that wrote more derogatory crap about Christians and Muslims. He was pretty much eight-balling any religious person, and he was trying to blame all... wars on religious people, so I wrote him, I'm going to read you what I wrote him, and actually I mentioned you in there, and it'll just take a minute, and then we'll let Bob talk. I'm sorry, Bob, but I wanted to read this first, so I have to get to it,
right.
Just a second. So it's basically, what he did is he wrote an article, and this is the guy who's a thorn in my side every week at the Reader. The Evils of Religious Politicians and the Growth of Human Savagery. So mainly he's talking about ISIS, but then he goes back to all the wars, and he says that Hitler's war, the Third Reich War, destructive... Wait, just a minute. I got to get to it. The Holocaust still remains the unique, most evil religious crime in history. And then I explain below that Hitler was not a Christian at the time that he was committing those acts. He was deluded. But I wrote, a lot of evil exists in the world and it cannot be attached to religion alone. Being void of a subscription to a higher power beyond your own intellect is dangerous too. Being a Marine and an educator, I wonder how your stream of thought is so entirely narrow-minded. You live in a small town. Do you know one Christian, one Jew, one Baha'i faith, one Muslim, one Sikh, one Buddhist of that religion or any religion that practices hospitality, laying their life down for their brother, doing what Jesus and other prophets have asked? The church is still picking up the slack of the government. I know a friend of mine in Santa Monica who is 55 and rides his bike because his head gasket blew. He has been in a bind for 6 months and then turned around and loaned my other friend $2,000 to publish a book. Why? Because he purposely lives a life of inconvenience to serve others. I am a political scientist, and it is necessary to focus on two sides of every problem. When the Ukrainian army recently marched to the Russian command in order to speak, the Russians were poised to kill. But they lowered their guns to speak because the Ukrainians sang an old Russian battle song. Dietrich Bonhoeffer sacrificed his life in World War II so others could live. You can't be an outsider ranting about religion. You must walk a day in a religious man's shoes. Thomas Merton, Dorothy Day, Father Larry Rosebaugh, Phil Berrigan, Dan Berrigan, Bob Graff, and Jimmy Carter. You can start with peeking into the lives of those men and women, see where you end up. Violence is an act of anger and hatred. Maybe the Islamic State expects moral perfection of their brothers. Religious or not, they won't get it. They can only do it by taking the log out of their own eye. Any comments?
I am always not offended, what's the word? I always react strongly to the statements that, you know, like all wars are started by the churches, that, you know, that most wars are religious wars and so forth. I really react to that because it's simply not true. But I also know that it's kind of a waste of time trying to explain that to the other party, because he's already made up his mind. You know, he's a retiree.
He served as a school board member, and every week he's mainly stabbing at the Christians. One week he wrote about abortion. But he's always making digs at Christians, and I'm freaking sick of it.
Yeah, I think you'll see that if a person steps back, because I have a couple friends, they're atheists, or they're neutral in their feelings towards God, and so this will always come up in a long discussion. It's like, well, wars, you know, are the cause of religion's cause of all wars. And I go, well, really? I said, so, like, these Russians that don't believe in God, the communists of China, you know, the 90 million people killed, the Koreans, where they, you know, line up, you know, 5 or 10 million people, and those people suddenly disappear. These are governments that don't believe in God, and they're more violent, and they're more, in fact, it was interesting, my friend Margaret, you know, the silent screen, the daughter of a silent screen actress, her big complaint wasn't against the Germans, because she survived the Nazis. They took her adoptive parents, who were Jewish. They ran a circus, kind of, you know, she was actually worked at the trapeze and trampoline, all that stuff. She survived that. She said that wasn't the hardest. The hardest was the Russians when they came in. They were ruthless. They were raping children, old women, and there was no hope. She said actually the Germans had a little bit more discretion on the streets, and that there was always the hope that the Nazis could get kicked out. But when the Russians came in, there was no hope because the Allies left, and it's like they were in charge, and the Iron Curtain came up. She lived in Hungary and, you know, Poland, Czechoslovakia, all those places. It was a very dark time. And he said because they were a godless country, they had no heart or compassion whatsoever. And she's the one who lived through all that stuff. So I think the issue always is whoever has power and has a form of government has to have an army, and that army has to fight and kill to defend its people. If they happen to be spiritual and believe in God, they're going to use the name of God to invoke their war. And if they're
Did you know the Russians defended Crimea back in the day during the Crimean War because they didn't want the Muslims overtaking that land and they wanted to keep it for the Christians?
Wow. I know usually in these situations, the government will usually turn to the church to actually suppress the people, you know, to have faith and hope, because without hope the people will revolt and they'll become disillusioned and your culture will actually shrink. So in general, you actually kind of need the church to instill some kind of form of hope and morality and support of government, you know, because it makes you a law-abiding citizen if you're a spiritual person. So what's your slant on it, Bob?
We only have a couple of minutes. We have 10 minutes left, and I just wanted to read something quick. Okay? This same guy, Ed Raymond, wrote in another article about hormones and chromosomes. He wrote that, excellent chance one of the 12 Christian apostles was gay. Since man lived in caves and at least another 1,500 gay species roam the earth, about 5 to 8% of species are homosexual. Science has determined that. One of the Christian apostles, highly possible. Over 400 American Roman Catholic bishops are members of a very conservative council of American bishops. At least a dozen could be gay. According to research by Anne Fausto Sterling, an expert in biology and gender development, one in 1,666 children is born with neither XX or XY chromosomes, a base for determining gender. Some girls are born who want to be boys. Some boys are born who want to be girls, blah, blah, blah. The only reason I read this, you guys, is just to show where his line of thinking is on practically every article he writes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, science can't determine that 5 to 8% of the population is gay. It's motivated by cultural influence and many things. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, forgive me, but I don't agree with that statement. I personally believe that almost all homosexuality is biologically biologically determined. It's not a choice. It's something that, you know, most people that are gay, most guys that are gay, when asked, when did you know you were gay, they respond 12 or 13. You know, it's not something that is culturally or whatever, you know, influenced into you. But it's something that you, from your, at least from your early childhood and possibly even from before you were born, it's in your particular genetics. You know, they did autopsies, this is like 20 years ago or 25 years ago, on 19 men who were known, absolutely, that these men were homosexual, that they had, and every one of them had never been with a woman in his lifetime. 17 of the 19, there's in the back of your brain is a little area, a little process, a little something that's about normally, when you're a child, it's about the size of a small pea. And then when you hit age 12 or 13, it triples in size.
Are you talking about your pituitary gland?
No. It's something a lot smaller than that. I need to go back and learn the name of this exact little part. Okay, but out of the 19, 17 of them, it was still the same size as it would have been for an 8-year-old boy, not for a man who was, you know, 50, 60, 70 years old. Likewise with lesbians, they do autopsies on lesbians. Inside the inner ear, there's certain little parts that's it may be the actual what are they called, the little sticks in there, the hearing sticks. It may be them. That again, these are twice the size they should be in lesbians. As opposed to normal females. In almost every case, when I do an autopsy on a lesbian, and I look at check this part of the inner ear, they find that these, what does this mean? It means that the same chromosome that controls your sexuality also controls, you know, the development of the inner ear et cetera, you know? I believe that almost all homosexuality. I use the word to cover, you know, women also, is genetically determined.
I'm glad you have those theories, but I think homosexuality is determined by geography, culture, popularity of that type of lifestyle, and deception.
Well, I could see both of your points. I mean, Madonna made a career out of the whole gay agenda. You know, Bette Midler actually got her career started. Barry Manilow was her keyboard player, and she would play in gay clubs. And Lady Gaga certainly has made a whole thing with her little monsters that follow her, just to basically, "I was born this way," is her, you know, one of her theme songs. I kind of look at it this way. I mean, I'm 55, and, you know, so let's be candid. I mean, like 3 days ago or whatever, I wake up, I've got this humongous erection, and I can go, you know what? I need to just have sex with some, you know, co-ed and some young gals and run around because I'm biologically, and with lots of them, because I see a hot gal, you know, living in L.A. by the ocean, you know, going through Venice. You see, you know, women wearing all kinds of stuff. And you go, I just biologically need to have sex with all of them. Well, that's true.
So with,
I mean, yeah,
within
but I'm,
one
not,
radio
I'm not a
show
dog.
You've been, in one radio show, you've been arrested for picking
yes.
up a hooker and you had a hard-on.
Right.
What are we going to find out next?
Right. So, you know, the point is, you know, people can go, yeah, I'm genetically this way. It's like, yeah, guys could genetically want to have sex with, you know, not all guys, but a great many of them want to have sex with, like, five or six women at the same time. There's, you know, pluralistic, you know, certain religions, you know, and you look at Solomon, he had, you know, thousands of wives. David had a bunch of wives. Well, they all, you know, that culturally, in some societies, they still allow that kind of thing. So, but it doesn't mean it's right or it doesn't mean I have to. It just means that it's something I have to have a discipline about. So I kind of look at it, you do have choices regardless. It's just, you know, a matter of choosing your
morality. A lot of my sexual urges are just, when I have sexual urges, it's I want to have sex. I don't care what he looks like. Or if I'm in a relationship, I just want it. But, of course, 99.9% of the time I don't act on it.
Right. And that's the difference, you know. Yeah, people. We all have urges, you know, whether it's to do something. I always tell people when we talk about murders, I said, you know, I'm sure most all of us have had the thought at one time, like, oh, I just, if that person, you know, I want to just beat them over the head with a bat or whatever. You know, that's just a random thought. You know, maybe someone pisses you off and you have road rage or whatever. I said, that's one level. But the second level is to go, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy some rope or I'm going to get a gun and load bullets. That's another level. And so then there's another level. You actually go out and buy the gun and you get the bullets and you go to their house. But there's even another level, and that is you knock on the door, they open it up and you point it and you pull the trigger. And each one of those are different levels. We all, you know, we all have the thought of, you know, hurting someone or stealing or running away from problems. Maybe that's we're not confrontive. But the point is, there are different levels that make me and you different from a murderer or a rapist. Or,
well, we only
know.
Have 2 minutes left, so my final thought is that I wanted to run to Canada tonight. Now, you guys give your 30-second spiel.
Go for it, Bob.
The candidate?
I wanted
sorry,
to
I
run away to Canada. It's 1 hour from here.
Oh, well, I don't know why. What's different about Canada? I mean,
I wouldn't have to face a problem that I'm facing right now. But John, please don't blurt it out on the air.
I won't.
So, what's different
yeah.
in Canada? We don't have goofed up politicians. Now we only have one. We only have 1 minute left, literally. So why don't you give a conclusion? Okay.
Well, I could say this, that, so you've gone from L.A. where you could have run to Mexico to up to Minnesota where you can run to Canada. I would say follow the truth wherever it leads you unless it's across the Canadian border.
Follow the truth wherever it leads you unless it's John's studio where we're planning to stay next month. Bob, your turn.
Oh, no, I really don't really have any good
joke.
Wrap up for all of this, you know. Yeah.
John,
I just, you know,
Bob, would you like to share your